Welcome back to Stunt Stories. I'm Corey Eubanks, and today I have a living legend, stuntman, stunt coordinator, second unit director on my show. I'm so excited. I mean, this man has done shows, feature films like Commando and Predator, Inner Space, Red Heat, Twins, Total Recall, Terminator 2, Judgment Day, Patriot Games, Last Action Hero, True Lies, Eraser, Pearl Harbor, a bunch of the Fast and Furious films, Terminator Genesis, Blade Runner 2049. He's done so many TV shows, we'd be here for a week and a half going over that whole resume. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Joel Kramer. Joel, thank you for being on Stunt Stories.
Corey, are you kidding me? It's an honor, buddy. You know, you and I go back so far, and we have so many great stories in this business together that we could do a whole podcast just for about 3 hours on that. As fortunate as I've been in this business, and we both kind of started around the same time. I think I was in a few years prior to you, but it's been a glorious 47 year career so far.
Oh my gosh. And that's what it's been, 47 years for you.
I know. I mean, the time flies. I look at it and I go, where'd it go?
Oh my,
I was never going to grow old, you know? And,
I remember seeing you back in the '80s, and I was like, everyone's always talking about Joel Kramer. Did you hear what he did? Yeah, he did this. He did that. Oh my God. And you're doubling, you know, Schwarzenegger. And didn't you also double David Hasselhoff?
I did. And I was going to tell you a funny story about that, because one of the most famous stories about that is, you know, I worked on Knight Rider, doubling David. And every time I see Hasselhoff, it could be 30 years later, he looks at me, he goes, God, I'll never forget that night you did the car jump through the Ring of Fire. Let me tell you, Corey, did you ever hear about that one?
No, tell us.
So Jack Gill cooks up this stunt where they're going to do it's a circus. It's supposed to be Michael Knight is infiltrating a corrupt circus under the big top. So they're going to jump the kit car, you know, 50 feet ramp to ramp through a big ring of fire. Only they've got David Hasselhoff standing on the back of the kit car. And Jack calls me up. He says, look, we built this plate. Buzz Bundy's going to do the jump, and it's going to be great. And I'm thinking, huh. I said, why don't you put a dummy on there? And I'm thinking to myself, they did me. Anyway, long story short, you know, Buzz was, and God bless Buzz, and God rest him. He saved my life that night. We did a couple of test jumps, and he was landing a little flat. So I said, Buzz and Jack went up to him. I said, you got to come a little, you know, as you know, Corey, power on off those ramps, tip that nose down. But what they didn't take into factor was I'm wearing this electric lit up suit. I'm standing on the back of this car, and they rigged ski boots, water ski boots. And they had a harness plate going up the back, harnessed into a chest harness on my back. And I had these water ski ropes I'm hanging on to. This is not bright, you know. So,
gosh, we dang.
So Buzz hits the ramps at about 40. And all I remember is everybody standing over me as I came to.
Oh, my God.
Going, did we do the stunt yet?
What happened?
Oh, what happened? Oh, they tell me, really? Well, what happened? You know the deal. So what happened was is the car came in, back wheels first, hit the ramps, kaboomed, shot me, blew me right out of that harness. The harness rings broke, and I shot up. They said I went up 8 feet in the air, never letting go of the water ski ropes. And I came down on top of the car, and Buzz pitched it sideways and threw me off as I was sliding over the hood. Saved my life.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
That made me famous.
Hey, what about that jump that you did doubling Schwarzenegger? What was it on that you jumped?
Predator.
Was that branch supposed to break?
Well, the branch was supposed to. No, actually, what they wanted to do is they wanted me to catch the branch and just flip, do a flip and fall.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I did it like John McTiernan. Old Lemon Face, we used to call him, the director. He, I'll be honest with you, Corey, the man is a class A prick.
No kidding.
I don't mind saying, oh, yeah.
Hey, if he is, call him what it is, man.
It is. He doesn't like stuntmen. I did that stunt 7 times. I kept hitting the branch, and he goes, okay, hang on to it this time. I would jump out and hang on to it. Now, don't hang on to it. And then it finally broke, and I think that's the one they liked.
Yeah, man, that looks so freaking scary.
there was a stunt I did at the end of that movie where Arnold comes off the waterfall. And I did like a 114-foot fall to water with a 1.5. And we were shooting down in Palenque, Chiapas. And it's one of those stunts you're thinking about the whole movie, you know, because I've never been that high before. And when it comes time to shoot it, this is a stunt you only want to do once. So Craig Baxley was our second unit director. He had already left the show. We were down there with Mick Tiernan finishing up for a week, and I had Henry Kinji and Tony Brubaker down there as water safety. And it was a 180-degree canyon wall, and the Mexican effects team had built this seat that I would sit on. They'd hoist me up and up, and I had a mark at 85 feet. And we already did the scene where I came off the waterfall on a shorter waterfall. And now I've got to do this big fall, come through the air, hit the water, and it's where Arnold climbs out, and he's covered in mud, and the predator can't find him.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So we get up there, and I see my 85-foot mark, and I'm going, oh, yo, stop. And I'm going up and up, and I'm going, hey, stop, up. And I'm finally, I know I'm well over 110 feet. I'm going, oh, this is not good.
Oh,
and
man.
They got the cameras lined up, and I hear, ready, and action. So I come off. I come into a header, and then I come back to my feet, and I come into the water. Pull it off. It was awesome. I piped as I hit the water, and my adrenaline's pumping. Well, old Levin Face McTurnan comes up to me, and he goes, hey, we missed it on 3 cameras. You got to go again. I went, what? I said, John, you don't do a 110-foot high fall again. And by the way, why was I up above my mark? And he just smirked and walked away from me.
Oh, my God.
So they dry me off. They put the makeup back on me. They hoist me up again. Now I'm screaming again. Stop. I'm going higher. I do it a second time. Comes out picture perfect. Now I'm pretty spanked at this time. The adrenaline's going, but you know, the adrenaline wears off and you're spanked. Well, old Lemon Face McT, this prick, comes up. He goes, we jammed 2 cameras. You got to go one more time. I'm going, are you fucking kidding me? And as they're hoisting me up, I see him moving cameras. He lied to me.
Oh.
So wow. On the third take, Corey, I come off in a 1.5, and I'm coming back to my feet, and I just don't quite get my left leg locked as I hit the water. And it blew up past my ear, and I blew my knee out. I mean, I break surface, and Kinji and Brubaker there in the Zodiac, they said, guys, pull me in, my knee's toast. So now we're down in Palenque, Chiapas, which is near the Guatemalan border in the middle of the frickin' jungle at a place called Agua Azul. And I mean, the best hospital they got there is a medicine cabinet, you know. So
God.
Long story short, they get me to shore and I'm laying there. My knee's just blown up. And Mick Tiernan comes up to me. He goes, hey, good stunt, worth getting hurt for. I tried to swing at him. I couldn't get up to hit him. I'd have hit him. I'd have knocked him right the fuck out.
Oh, man. And he would have deserved it.
Yeah, damn. He would have deserved it. He's a son of a bitch. Wow. But hey, you know, Predator was a tough film. I think it was logistically, out of all the films, you know, that I've ever done, one of the toughest locations and most physically demanding films I ever had to do.
Oh, man, Joel. But hey, how did
we get up?
Go ahead. What?
Go ahead, Corey. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, where did you get your athleticism from? What was your upbringing?
My upbringing, you know, I grew up, I was a champion swimmer and diver. You know, I did high dive. When I was an AAU champion swimmer. And at the age of 8 years old, the coach came to my dad and said, I want to train your son for the Olympics. He's the 11th fastest swimmer in the state of Arizona for 18 years old and under. I mean, I was in swim meets every week growing up here in Tucson.
Wow.
And I was just killing it. I was just a water kid. And then I got into motocross and some martial arts, and, you know, just anything I could get my hands on.
Well,
mountain climbing.
What made you
car driving?
What made you think, oh, I want to be a stuntman?
Well, what's funny, Corey, is I didn't want to be. When I was a kid, okay, we grew up in Woodland Hills. There's a man, stuntman, you might remember him, named Roger Creed.
Yes.
And Roger Creed, God bless him and God rest his soul, when he wasn't working, he was building homes and room additions. And him and his wife were doing a room addition on our neighbor's house. And Roger and his wife, Tanya, I mean, he was built like a stud back then. I'm like 9 years old, 8 years old. And he was working on the old Batman series back then. And he used to take us neighborhood kids down to the set so we could watch some film. And I got really, you know, enthralled with this. I go, I want to be a stuntman. So I saw what they had to do. I go, fuck that. I just said, these guys are false. You know, this is old school stuff. I'm going, nah, I don't think so. And then in high school, there was a 76 station on the, I went to Taft High School in the Woodland Hills. There's a 76 station on the corner of Burbank and Topanga. And it was run by a guy named Bob Hooper. And I met Terry Leonard there. I worked there. During my high school hours, I would work at this gas station. It was like Party Central. And Terry Leonard was in there. He had a race car and a Pantera. And I met Terry.
No kidding.
And he was just leaving to go do Apocalypse Now. I think it was 1974 or 75. And, you know, Terry was larger than life to me back then. And I really got to know him. He used to work on his cars there. He knew the owner of the gas station. And it was just listening to his stories. And, you know, Terry, he's so colorful. And I got the itch.
Storyteller.
I got the itch. And then, Corey, after high school, I went to college for a year. And I wanted to be an actor. And I got an agent. Actually, George Barris, the custom car king, helped me get my SAG card when I was 17 and a half. I was dating his daughter. That helped. He was doing low-budget movies. And I sucked at acting, Corey. I mean, I really sucked at it. And I met Wally Crowder. He was coordinating this low-budget movie called Magwheels that George Barris was doing with the old 50s singer Fabian. Remember Fabian?
Yes.
No, I'm sorry. This was a show called Disco Fever. Pardon me. I didn't take my Prevagen today. Anyway, I'm working on it, and Will Harper and I were working on the show, and Tom Harper, and we were just kids. We ended up doing a bunch of motorcycle stunts, and I met Wally, and he said, you know, I could help you get into driving and this and that, and that's where it started.
No kidding.
And through Wally, I met Ronnie Rondell, senior.
Oh.
And then I got under Ronnie's wing, and the rest is, and Terry Leonard. I saw Terry one day about 5 years later at Yellow Fingers in Woodland Hills. He goes, Joel, what are you doing here? I said, Terry, I'm a stuntman. He goes, get out. Really? I said, yeah, I got into the business. And
God, those
remember
are
you and I
living legends that helped you out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I remember when you and I did Cobra with Terry.
Yeah, in 85. Yeah,
was that 85?
1985, yeah.
Holy cow. No, Terry's a legend. You know, we talk every day.
Hey,
we talk every day.
Tell me about your experiences working. You know, we just lost the great Gene LaBelle.
Gene LaBelle.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. The people that don't know Gene LaBelle know of him. What a phenomenal man. I'm going to tell you a story. Just what a great guy Gene was. The first time I met Gene, I was maybe in the business a year, Corey. I think it was 1977, 78. Mm-hmm. And we had these bleachers set up, and Wally Crowder was running the show. And he goes, hey, I want you to roll that. You're gonna get hit and go down these bleachers. Do you like a stair fall? Okay, I'm young, dumb, and full of cum. And I put out a couple of elbow pads, and Gene LaBelle comes over. He goes, hey, kid, come here. You know, he had this big suitcase he'd drag around full of pads. He goes, let me give you some hips, knees, and elbows. I said, no, Gene, I'll be okay, but I appreciate it. So I did the first take, and I came up to Gene. I said, hey, Gene, can I still borrow those? And he's laughing his ass off, right? And I started training judo with him down at LACC. That's where I met Mike Mandrell
and really?
Other people. Yeah, because Gene was, he would hold Thursday night. Was it Monday or Thursday?
I never went. I just heard. I was too scared to go down there.
Oh, it was great because Gene used to wear this pink gi. And I remember one day he said, Kramer, come here. I'm going to teach the class a new move. And all I remember is I'm just going whap, 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 whap all over the mat.
He was using you.
I didn't know what day it was. Oh, yeah, as a practice dummy. He didn't hurt. He was just having fun. But he looks at me and he goes, hey, your nose is bleeding. I'm bleeding all over myself. And then he looks down. I had blood all over his gi, all over it. And he looked at me, grabbed me, whap, 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 whap for bleeding on his key. But the funniest story, Corey, and it'll tell you Gene LaBelle's true humor. We're working for Ronnie Rondell in Honolulu on a show called Hawaiian Heat TV series. And we're all staying at the Colony Surf by Diamond Head. And on our days off, we'd be out in the water, you know, swimming, having fun. And Gene would only walk up to his ankles. I go, Gene, you got to come out in the water. There's nothing that's going to hurt you or bite you. He goes, nah, you know what? I don't trust it. I don't trust it. I said, so it took me about an hour and a half, and I coerced him out there. And I got him out to chest level. And the water's really clear. And I'm swimming underwater. I'm looking at stuff. Gene's waiting around. And I grab these two pieces of sharp, broken shell. And I see Gene, and I walk up, and I take it, and I hit him in the thigh and grind him up and down like something did him. Well, he fucking... Yeah, all I see is he darted out of the water and ran out of that water so freaking fast. Oh. I never saw a man run that quick. And he turns around and I break surface and I'm laughing my ass off.
Oh,
and
shit.
He folds his arms and he goes, "Don't worry, Joel, I'll wait."
I said, "You got to come out of the water sooner or later."
It gets better.
Oh.
So the water's 80 degrees. I said, "I can stay out here for hours, Gene. I'll outwait you." He goes, "No, you won't." Now the crowd's starting to gather. Oh. So I swim from there. I kind of go towards Hilton Hawaiian Village, which is about a little more than a half mile swim. And I swim down there. I go, "Oh, I'll just swim out of the water here. He'll never get me." Well, as I come in, there he is. I go, "Oh, fuck. Oh, this sucks." And he's got a big smile. And he says, I swim back out. And I start swimming back up to the Colony Surf. And there's Gene again. I've been in the water, Corey, now for almost 3 hours. I'm getting freaking cold and tired. And there's probably 20 stunt guys and crew people just waiting. And I just said, "Oh, God, I got to go in and take my beating like a man." I get out of there. Gene grabbed me, and he just did a few throws. I mean, I was covered with sand from head to toe.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he choked you out.
No, I'm face down, and he's pulling my hair, and he turns me over, and he's pulling my nose. And I'm going, "Gene, I'm so sorry. I'll never do it." He's laughing. He was very kind to me.
God. That's kind. That's being kind.
That is being kind.
For Gene Bell.
Oh, that's Gene. When he taught me how to, but he did teach me his technique to choke somebody out. And as it was back in the, I think it was the early 80s, I'm on Balboa Boulevard and I'm driving up to get on the freeway. I'm going southbound to get on the 101 to get down and work out with Gene. And traffic's not moving, Corey. And I'm going, "What the hell?" And I, all of a sudden, I look out, and I'm 10 cars back, and there's two guys fighting in the middle of the intersection. And not a car's moving. So I get out of my car, and this one guy's on top of this other guy. And I get my arm around him, lift him up, and choke him right out right then and there, drag him over. I was a big guy back then, in shape. And the other guy gets up, thanking me. He can barely breathe. And it's like, "Let's move the traffic." So I cut to an hour later. I'm telling Gene what happened. He looked at me, patted me on the back, and goes, "You get 2 points for the go behind."
Oh my God. That's one thing I regret, never going down to his, was his dojo? Is that what it was?
He had a dojo down at LA City College, and it was open to anybody that wanted to come down and train and learn.
Yeah.
I was just too
scared. I heard that he'll just, as soon as you get there, he'll just choke you out. And I'm like, I don't feel like being choked out today.
No, mainly what he did is he would demonstrate on his kid, on David.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
we were on Starsky and Hutch, and he was working, and David was there. And I think like Jeff Dashnaw and Jimmy Roberts pitched in some money. I forget how much it was, like $100 or something. And he choked out David, his own son. Chokes him out, drops him right there in the asphalt. Cause I remember his tongue was sticking out of his mouth and it was on the, and then he goes to try to pants him. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty brutal to your own son, you know?
Well, there's another story where I think it was Mike Vendrell and I forget the name, I can't remember which stuntman it was, just some mouthy new kid. And Mike choked him out, and we carried him out and put him on a bus bench with his pants down at his ankles. And he didn't come to for like about 90 seconds.
Oh, jeez.
I can't remember who it was, Corey. I just don't think that guy lasted long in the business.
Probably not.
Go ahead.
You after your, spectacular career, phenomenal career as a stuntman, but then you started stunt coordinating and second unit directing. And do you still... I mean, do you miss that? Or did you feel like you fulfilled your career or what is it that you're doing now?
Right now, I'm still working part-time right now. And, what happened, Corey, is about 4 years ago, my parents were ailing. They're in their 90s. And my mom had cancer. And so I moved them out here to Arizona. And I put them in an adult living facility. And my dad, my mom was 90, dad was 94, and he couldn't take care of her. So I just said, you know what? I'm going to take care of my folks. The last big job I did was Blade Runner. I was 2049. I went and shot second unit on that. And after that, I was offered Aquaman to go down to Australia for a year. And James Wan, the director, who's a dear friend of mine, I couldn't go down. I said, I can't leave my folks. I can't go for a year at this point. So mom passed away about 7 months later. I got her to hospice. And then I just said, I'm just going to be here for dad. And he, 7 months ago, he passed with military honors. And, but I don't think I could live with myself if I didn't do it, Corey.
No, you did the right thing, man. God bless you for that. You did the right
thing. Thank you. It was, my dad was a tough ex-military aerospace engineer, and life was black and white to him. He loved his family dearly, but it was black and white world. And he was very tough. And for him, he still had about 80% of his marbles left when he passed, but physically he was gone.
Yeah.
And it was out of my wheelhouse to care for him that much, because it was tough for me, because he could be so brutally tough. But, you know, you never stop learning in life. And I learned a lot of great life lessons from that, and I think he did too. Wow. And so I'll get back to work. I've got one more back surgery to go through, and then I'd like to get back at it next year. And because right now at this point, I can't stand on a set all day. You know, I broke my back on Total Recall, 38 years ago.
Oh my God!
I did a high fall and an airbag seam split, and I went right through it down in Mexico City. And, you know, like you, we've all done a lot of big car jumps, stunts, it catches up with you, the whiplashes, but, you know.
Those high falls, though, man. Haven't we lost more stuntmen due to high falls than anything?
We just lost. Forgive me, I can't think of the man's name on a show back in Atlanta about 4 or 5 years ago. And we lost Jake, and we've lost a lot of people to high falls due to airbag misses and pilot error. It's crazy. I'm glad we don't use them as much anymore.
Yeah,
I really am.
Hey, wouldn't you say though that back in the '80s that those were the best days ever to be a Hollywood stuntman?
I would say I came in, Corey, at the end of the golden era. You know, when Hal Needham was still running shows, and the '70s. Into the '80s. By the time we got into the early '90s, it was still a little bit there.
Yeah.
And then it became so much more corporate.
Yes.
And things were changing. And you couldn't be the creative force that we were. I mean, those days are indelibly etched in my brain. The kids today have no idea what the guys before us and what you and I did to make it safer for them.
No.
You know, I call them all wire riders today. You know, I'm sorry, I don't mean this as a put down, but I get these kids working for me and say, okay, you're going to fall off of here, hit this and go to the ground. They go, where's my pad? I said, what do you mean your pad? Your pad's the cement, pad up.
Yeah.
Why should I put a pad down and have it cost the company $5,000 to $10,000 in CGI? You know, come on, this is your job to a point.
And
I'm all about safety.
And remember, in the days when we put on pads, you didn't want them to be visible. You wanted them to
not
be
at all.
So thin that nobody knew you were wearing anything.
Corey, I'll tell you a story about the first time that we were ever able to erase cables. You know, it was back on Terminator 2 Judgment Day. It was the first $100 million movie ever done. And I remember sitting when I was prepping in Jim Cameron's office, and Jim said to me, he said, Joel, if I fuck this up, it's the end of big budget action pictures, were his exact words. He goes, we're under the microscope on this one.
Wow.
So we were discussing the big motorcycle jump where Arnold jumps the Harley into the flood control canal.
Very famous sequence.
I'll tell you a couple of funny stories about that. So I've been out scouting locations. Jim and I were scouting all these flood control canals all over in the northeast side of the valley. And I came back with some pictures. I said, Jim, I think I found the spot. And I said, here's a service road along the flood control canals where we can set, you know. And I said, it's 1,000-foot span. There's a bullnose here, and we can jump the bike up. So he's buying it. We go out and look at it. He goes, Kramer, I'm going to tell you something. I don't want you to take a dirt bike and build it like a Harley. He goes, we can erase the cables. I'm like, what? He goes, yeah. I said, there's a new process now. I can take the cables out so you can fly the bike off. So he goes, you could probably counterbalance it here and do this. I said, no, Jim, we can't do that. I said, you got a bike that weighs 700 pounds. You got a stuntman that weighs 200 pounds plus with wardrobe on. I said, we're going to fly this thing. We're going to fly it. And I said, we'll use that service road. I'm going to put two big cranes up here, two big 60-ton cranes, 90-ton cranes. And we're going to use the cable as a header. And we designed a trolley system where we could fly the bike. Tommy Fisher, Lane Levitt helped design it. And I said, I can have a truck over here, pulls the bike. He goes, well, how are you going to decelerate it? I said, I talked to the crane operator. He's got a digital tension meter that weights in pounds on that cable. He says, so if we've got 1,000 feet of cable out there, we've got probably 12,000 pounds of weight on that. You put the bike and the rider on there, now you got 12,800 pounds. He goes, I'll just spool it out with the winch, and I'll make that bike weigh 50 pounds when it hits. And he goes, I got to see this. So we spent about $60,000 on testing it, which I was the test monkey, of course, and it worked great. I mean, it was phenomenal. This guy touched that bike down. What he basically did, Corey, is the whole overhead cable system, he just lowered it.
Wow, but that was you guys. That was cutting edge technology back then.
At that time, it was. Now we're testing one day, and Scott Fisher, one of our effects guys, I'm sitting on the bike. We're in a big yard in North Hollywood. We're only doing about a 500-foot run, and I'm up on this pedestal with the bike. They suspend me, and I go, Scott, on the radio, pull up the slack. So he would pull up the slack on the spreader. We had a cable to it, and then he would take off in a pickup truck, build up speed, and it would move the bike. Well, I see the slack going faster and faster. I'm going, what is he doing? I'm going, hey, Scott, cut, stop, 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 boom. All of a sudden, the bike slingshots. I'm hanging on to it. I travel at about 40 miles an hour, and now as I'm coming towards the crane, I'm going straight up. I'm going straight up. I'm at about 12 feet in the air and climbing. I just bail off the bike.
Oh, shit.
I hit the ground and frappe. The bike comes down, just nearly misses me.
Joel.
And it just happened that Jim Cameron was driving up in a van to come watch the rehearsal. And he ran over. You okay? I said, I'm okay, okay. I'm pretty bruised up. But Scott Fisher, I go, what the fuck were you thinking? All I heard was go. I said, no, we said, pull up the slack. How does that go correlate in your freaking brain? You know? And then Cam went over and just fucking read him the Ryan Act, which he's known for.
Oh, gosh.
I could tell you stories about on set with Jim. I mean, it was just, he's a very, emotionally intelligent director that will push you to the limits. And I respect him, but boy, we got into some screaming matches.
I heard he could be just brutal to work with. I've never worked with the man.
Oh, we were doing, on True Lies, we had a fire sequence where Arnold cuts loose with a flamethrower. Our effects department, we built it. We were using kerosene and diesel fuel. And I said in prep, when we were testing, I said, Jim, look, you want 8 full burns and 6 partial burns. But I said, we can't light these guys. I could lick them with the end of it if we move it past him real quick. But we can't shoot these guys straight on with this. We'll fry them. He goes, well, okay, I could do longer. I said, yeah, we'll work out all the angles. So now we're shooting the sequence. On night 2, Corey, I go up to Jim. And it's hot. We're pushing we're doing 16-hour days. We haven't even broken. We're doing 7-day weeks. And I haven't broken for a meal. So there's meal penalties up the butt. Long story short, I said, Jim, I need 20 minutes to go mix up some new fuel. And he gets up in my face in front of the crew and he goes, what the fuck do you mean, Kramer? You've had 3 fucking months to prepare for. And he's going off at me, his fingers in my chest. And I go, I pull out my notes. I said, here's our handwritten notes. 8 burns, 6 partials, and we're on burn 29. And he takes it, wads it up, and I said, I'm going to go take my... He goes, listen, motherfucker. I said, hey, Jesus. Fuck you, don't go. We're in each other's faces, cussing. And I said, as long as I'm your stunt coordinator, he goes, I can't what? I said, you're not doing it this way. It's too... He wanted to lick the flames through these guys. And it went from me getting fuel to me going... He goes, well, I want to change the shot to this. I said, you can't, it's too dangerous. And now we're back in each other's faces. And I said, as long as I'm your stunt coordinator, as long as what, buddy? I said, you're not fucking doing it. And I'm nose to nose with the guy. I'm livid. I mean, I'm rabid at this point. And all of a sudden he puts his arm around me and goes, okay, we'll do it your way. And I'm like, you know, and I've still got a drum. He comes up to me later that night going, you wanted to punch me, didn't you? I'm like, oh yeah. Oh yeah. It was close.
He sounds a little bit like Michael Bay.
Oh, he's not as bad as Bay. Because Jim will, after you say rap, it's over. It's done. He'll apologize.
Oh,
I
no,
mean,
dude.
I threw a radio at him, and he ducked and it blew up his monitor. That's how mad I got one day.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, Corey, I could go on, on Terminator 2. You got a quick story? Time?
Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Okay.
Yes.
So do you remember when we drove the SWAT van into the Cyberdyne lobby and we threw a 180 in it and Arnold rescues Dyson and Linda?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So that was a real lobby on a real Formica floor. And going into it was a wall of glass. And along the side of it is a 45-foot cement planter we can't remove. And I remember scouting it, and Jim goes, how are you going to do this? I said, well, put a line lock in this big 19-foot bread van looking like a SWAT van. I'm going to 180 this thing. So he builds this big security desk in the front. He goes, I want you to be able to hit that. I said, we'll hit it. And we had like 18 stuntmen in there. That's what was worrying me. So while we were shooting at Cyberdyne prior to this stunt, we'd wrap about 4:30 in the morning. And we were up in San Jose, and it was cold in the morning. So Joffrey Brown and I said, Joffrey, come with me. I'd lay out cones on the street to mimic the planters, the front windows, and the area of the lobby. And then I'd wet it down, Corey, to get it slick as shit.
Mm-hmm.
And after about 5 or 6 rehearsals, I had this thing dialed in, because I would start the slide literally, Corey, 20 feet before the window, and I would drift so far before that back end came, 5 feet. So I had this locked in. So now comes the night of doing it. And Jim's setting his cameras, and I'm showing him what we're going to do. And I walk up to him and I said, Jim, you can't put your cameras there. He goes, what do you mean I can't put my cameras there? Well, that's the way I'm sliding the van. He goes, you can't slide the van that way. The planter's in your way before you go. I said, Jim, I've showed you the rehearsals. By the time this thing comes around, I'm 25 feet past that. I'm already through the glass into the lobby. He starts thinking. His back leg, his heel would go up and down when he started thinking. And this thing's doing about 500 RPMs. And he goes, Kramer, I studied fucking physics in Forge in college. And we start getting tape measures out, and we're doing geometry, and he's walking, and it dawns on him. And he goes, okay, Kramer, I'm going to change my fucking screen direction for you, but you better not fuck this up or you're fired.
Oh, my God.
I said, by the way, Jim, I said, move that security desk up another 15 feet. He goes, why? Because I'm going to slide inside of it. He goes, bullshit, you're going to go through the back fucking wall. And when you do, you keep going because you're fired. So he leaves it where it is, Corey. I rehearse all the stunt guys. I said, my main concern is that these guys are out of the way. This is real for Micah Flores. You know, it's a little slick. So I kept rehearsing. I'd run in. And I'd say, bam, to simulate the glass and watch where these guys would go. I wanted to make sure they were well out of the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Which they were. Nobody got hurt. I do the first take. It comes out just like I said it would. This big thing comes around. I go in about 30 feet into this building and slide it. I miss the security desk. I'm 5 feet shy of it. And all of a sudden, Cameron comes out. And he goes, well, that was pretty fucking good. Can you do it again? I went, yeah. He goes, God damn it. I told you guys, put that security desk up here. Now I'm just sitting back laughing my ass off, right? But we did the second take and it came out just the way he wanted it. But I mean, I've had countless stories with him like that. And when you look back, they're humorous.
Yeah. On the day, you're stressed and you're.
Oh, the stress.
Yeah. And you're pissed off. But yet looking back.
Yeah. I got one apology from him. In all the shows I did for Jim, in the years I worked with him, I got one apology from him. But he looked around and made sure nobody was looking.
Wow.
But I did get him back, Corey. I got him with a fart in an elevator. It was brilliant.
He had that coming to him.
Oh, but he got me back after that. It's a funny freaking story. But, you know, I got him good.
Oh, wow. I tell you what, Joel, I could listen to you for hours, buddy. You know what I got to do is I got to get you back on another episode, if you'd be up for it. And also, I want to thank you very much for what you made for my wife and I. You actually... Oh,
you got it, buddy.
Can I... I mean, you made the... Thank God that you put those on... What was it on Facebook, I think? You made those...
Facebook.
Yeah. Those horseshoe towel holders that were just so awesome because I just moved to Texas and we're like,
right,
we got to get those.
I mean, I love Southwestern metal art. I love it. And do you remember Dick Wood? Not a joke. A special effects man, Richard Wood. Well, he lives out here. Long story short, Corey, we hooked up. We've been friends for 40 years, and he started teaching me how to weld and do metal work. So I build all sorts of yard art and fireplace. I just do it for fun. But I built these towel racks for our house. We just remodeled. My wife, Susan, goes, those are really cool. And I said, you know what? I don't like the hoops. I'm going to use horseshoes. And that's what I, you know,
happened accidentally.
Yeah. I'm glad you like them.
Awesome. Are you kidding me? Like we love them. And now my wife's going to paint them to kind of match some of the stuff in the house. But just
good.
Thank you so much. And if anybody, that you're a Facebook friend of mine, you could go on my Facebook page and see those photos of them. And I don't know how busy you are, Joel, but maybe would you be open to take other orders for other people to have some made?
You know, in between work, I love to do it for other people, you know, and it keeps me busy. I find things to do. And I just love bending metal.
That's awesome, man. Hey, I've enjoyed this. I've missed you, buddy. And I've enjoyed talking with you. And let's do this again soon, okay?
Anytime, my friend. All right. God bless, Corey.
Thanks, Joel. Love you, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Love you too.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye. Well, this is going to wrap up my second season of Stunt Stories. Going to go work on a couple of shows. I'll be out of town for a while, going back to New Orleans, and then going to be up in Moab, Utah. But I will resume doing Stunt Stories probably in a couple months. But thank you guys so much for listening.